We're backstage at the Drury Lane North in Marriott's Lincolnshire Resort, where we've just come from a performance of Ricardo Montalban, starring in Accent on Youth, and we are chatting with the youthful Mr. Montalban right now. Welcome to Chicago.
Thank you. You have all made me feel very welcome indeed. I always like to play. I've had two experiences before in the city of Chicago mm-hmm. itself, and a play that I did of George Bernard Shaw, Don Juan in Hell. And I must say we were received very warmly, as indeed we are being received now. You are very, very warm audiences and very, very hospitable people, and I thank you.
Well, you're welcome. You deserve the the warmth of the city, though. You do a good job.
Thank you.
When was that, when you were here in Don Juan in Hell?
It was about 6 years ago. It was a drama quartet. I did it with Agnes Moorhead, Edward Mulhair, and Paul Henreid. And we were for a month in... I guess it's the Schubert Theater, isn't mm-hmm, it? Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And that was very exciting. That's a marvelous play, you know.
You were on Broadway with that for a while.
Yes, right? Then we went to Broadway for... It was a limited engagement. Uh-huh. We played only a month in each place, yes. But then about 3 years ago, I did it again, and this time with Myrna Loy. Mm-hmm. Agnes Moorhead had passed away. Myrna Loy, Edward Mulhair, and Kirk Kasner. And we did an incredible tour. 138 cities in 6 months. It was one night stands, traveling all day by bus. The whole day. Get up about 8 in the morning, get in a bus, stop at the with the truck drivers. That's where we had our lunch. Rather greasy food. You know, they didn't agree too well with us. Clean, nice, but a little greasy, you know. And then get back on the bus and just barely arrive in time in some places for the performance. Get in a tuxedo, do the performance. Could never find a place open after the theater to eat. Very difficult in places for an actor to eat, because you don't like to eat before the performance, because then you feel heavy. And you're always afraid that something that you eat might upset your stomach or something when you're on stage. So your whole day is dedicated only for the show that evening. It's a very disciplined existence. And so this was very difficult, you know, to... in some places, even here, where I am, the restaurants are closed right after the... After the theater, I can't find a place to eat, you know. It's kind of difficult. So I have a refrigerator, and I have some salami and things, and I go to my room.
Salami,
my
afterwards.
Lonely room, and then eat away, yes.
Well, I would think that with a Mexican background, your stomach would be ready for anything.
No, you see, that is a misconception. Americans do get sick to their stomach when they go to Mexico, and... And once they get over it, they're all right. But the Mexicans, when we come from Mexico originally to this country, we get just as sick. Because what happens is that it's a different altitude. There are different bacteria in the water that you are not accustomed to. If you take water from this country and you put it in the microscope, you're going to find bacteria there that now we who live here are used to it. But you bring a fellow from Mexico and he gets just as sick as an American going to Mexico, you know. Yeah, well, the Mexican food is my favorite food anyway. It's delicious. It's very varied, the cuisine of Mexico, you know. In this country, of course, we only know pretty much the food from the north of Mexico. But there was a book written where the great connoisseur claims that Mexican food is as varied as Chinese or Indian. Tremendous variety of dishes. It's delicious cuisine. It's one of the best cuisines in the world, really, the Mexican cuisine.
How did you get from Mexico to Hollywood, California?
My oldest brother, Carlos is his name, and he had moved to California from Mexico. He was importing beer, Mexican beer in this country, and he's a man of many talents. And he, being the oldest in the family, sort of took over the role of second father to the youngest brother. I was the youngest brother, I am. And he brought me to Los Angeles for me to study English and tried to go to college and so forth. And I took public speaking so that I could accelerate my command of the language. And the teacher was also the drama coach of the school. And she gave me a small part in the school play, which I didn't want to do. I was scared to death. But once I did it, she liked what I did. And the next semester, she gave me the lead in the school play. And that time, I really enjoyed doing it. And that was the bug that got in me. That's it. Once you get that bug in, you can't get it out. There's no penicillin that can cure it.
That was at Fairfax High School.
Fairfax High School in Los Angeles. Then my brother moved to New York, and I followed him to New York, and he wanted me to go to college in New York. But during my vacation, very luckily, I landed a few jobs in summer stock around New York City. I played with Anita Louise, Buster Keaton, Francis Lederer, Tallulah Bankhead, Elsa Maxwell, and a talent scout from MGM offered me a screen test, but my mother became ill in Mexico, and I left. And while in Mexico, my mother recuperated, thank God, and the industry in Mexico was really flourishing in those days, so I decided to stay, and very quickly I became a star in films in Mexico. MGM saw my work again in Mexico, and then they offered me a long-term contract, and that's when I came permanent to this country.
That was about...
1945.
But you were a major star in Mexico at that time.
Before that, yes. Mm. Now, well, as a young, you know, mm-hmm. I was a young leading man, very young then. But yes, I would say that there were some great stars at the time. The number one still is Cantinflas, you know. Mm-hmm. Then they had the cowboy type of actor was Jorge Negrete and Pedro Armendariz, who made a big name for himself in this country as well. And then Arturo de Córdoba as the leading man. And then there was a drop. And then I came as the young leading man, you see. And I occupied a good position in the industry in Mexico. I owe everything to Mexico, really. Yes.
Well, when you went to, when you came to MGM, then, the roles you had at that time, at the beginning, were they comparable to the roles that you had in the Mexican
film? No, of course not, because, you know, in Mexico, the best roles are written for Mexicans, naturally. Mm-hmm. So I had very, very good parts. In America, the best North America, the best the United States of America, the best roles are written for Americans. Mm-hmm. And since I have an accent, those roles are just not available to me, and American writers don't write for people like me. So it's been a struggle for me. The proof is that there are very few of us from Mexico who have been able to make a name for ourselves in this country because the barriers are enormous, you know. Just the parts are just not available. But it's very early in my life I realized in this country that there is a saying, if you don't like it, why don't you get out? Well, I do like it, and I enjoy the challenge, so I accept it. But I also admit that it has not been easy. It's been... So therefore, you have to accept very often roles that are not very good in order to just function.
Well, you were always cast in the beginning, obviously, as the Latin lover.
That's right, yes.
And you tried hard to get away from that.
Yeah, because it was a caricature, really, you know. The Latin lover is as much a caricature as the bandido, you know. And the bandits and the guy sleeping under the cactus and all that. They're all stereotypes. Mm-hmm. They have really very little to do with the truth, if any, at all, you know. Of course there are bandits, but the bandits, there are bandits and bandits, and bandit is a human being who circumstances turned him in the wrong way, but he has dignity. He's a man who's not a caricature, you know, as portrayed in Hollywood. So, you know, as I say, the roles are, they don't come too readily. The writers don't seem to write for Latin Americans.
Well, when you were first under contract to MGM, was that like a 7 or 8 year contract?
Yeah, 7 year contract. I came for 7 years, and then they extended me for one more. I was there for 8 years, yes.
Did you have any say-so whatsoever
no.
in the roles?
No, when you were under contract to a studio, and you said, I don't want to do that part, they couldn't force you. But then they put you on suspension, which meant that you didn't draw any salary until they found another role for you. Might take a year. And I was married, 4 children. So I did anything they told me. Other than anything that would be demeaning to Mexico, I wouldn't do that. Or anything that would be against my moral principles, you know.
Did they ask you to do
that? No, never did, fortunately. Uh-huh. Fortunately, they didn't. Not while I was on the contract, no.
What was it like to work for MGM as a student?
It was very glamorous. The working conditions were extraordinary. They were marvelous. They were very glamorous. I mean, just to go to the commissary and see the array of stars that MGM had in those days was the most exciting period of my life. Those were truly stars. Gable, Turner, and Hepburn, Spencer Tracy. Mm. I mean, that studio was really studded with the greatest stars in the Hollywood firmament. But what's happened today with the advent of television is that television has created many instant stars who disappeared instantly. They don't have any lasting power. And in those days, it was a star system, and the stars were protected, and they wrote roles specifically for them. The publicity was geared to give them a certain image. It was like selling a product, and it was very, very exciting. There were many drawbacks, of course, but it was a very exciting period.
Well, they gave them the background, too. They developed the stars. They gave them the training ground.
Right.
Which is what happened to you, too, as you started here and there, and pretty soon you were co-starring with Esther Williams and some of those things.
Right.
And actually, when you finally left MGM, which was about
53...
You started getting some media roles as far as you were concerned.
Yes, because then what happened, the advent of live television happened, and that separated the men from the boys. There were many actors, good motion picture actors, who just refused to do live television because it was very hectic. There were no retakes. Mm-hmm. You were in front of 40 million people seeing you. God forbid that you made a mistake. It was very nerve-wracking. And in my case, out of necessity, I braved it and I did it. And I was offered a couple of very good parts, which I did, that are probably the better roles I've ever had, other than Don Juan in Hell. Mm-hmm. Those days of live television did afford me some very good roles.
Mm. Well, you you were also at that time making pictures like Sayonara.
That was later.
Was that after the live TV?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, Sayonara was very good. The only problem there was that I had a very, very, very good part, and that they were talking at the studio at the time when they saw the first cut that I would be a candidate for an Academy Award, a supporting role. And then they saw the picture and they previewed it, and the cards were all very complimentary to me, and they were really going to get behind me to be nominated. But there, for some strange reason, they felt that the picture was too long, and they started cutting, and they cut me out practically, and I was left with very little. So then they said, no, the part's too small now. We're going to get behind Red Buttons, and Red Buttons won the award that year, yes. Mm-hmm. My part was just decimated by the necessity of, you're not going to cut out Marlon Brando, so they cut me out, see. It was a very heartbreaking thing for
imagine,
me, yes, right? Yes.
It was. It seems, though, that the television really, especially since the television as we have today in the last 10, 15 years, has really become the place to expose the talents of Ricardo Montalban. We see you regularly in excellent roles, and you're really working.
Some of them are excellent. Others are not too excellent, but I feel that an actor has to act. I'm an actor, and that's my business. I'm not an actor when I'm home waiting for the phone to ring, you see. Mm-hmm. I am a very insecure man. Actors are insecure when they're not working. So I decided that I was never going to turn down any role other than if it were, I repeat, demeaning to Mexico or practically to any country, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I respect all nationalities. Or something that goes against my principles. I have turned down roles on those bases. But ordinarily, I'll do any role that comes my way because, as I say, I'm an actor only when I'm acting. And I have to practice my craft. And it's very difficult to practice my craft in my living room. You know, you have to do it in front of an audience or in front of a camera.
Is that why you decided to go on that grueling Don Juan mm-hmm. and Hell
right.
tour?
Right. Because it was an experience that I wanted to live through, and I almost didn't. It was very, very grueling. But it was an experience that I think I benefit from. It required an enormous amount of discipline, concentration, in a massive, massive role, probably the longest role ever written for an actor. It's longer than Hamlet or King Lear, you know. Of course, all committed to memory. And you have to be really very concentrated. When you don't feel well sometimes, you're on stage not feeling too well, and you have to go on. It's marvelous discipline for the actor, yeah.
You've just been seen more or less as a regular guest star in the Executive Suite series, which is over now, I guess. I suppose
that's what I hear. Yeah, they killed me because they didn't know that I had committed myself to this engagement here at the Drury Lane North. So when I told them I have to leave, they wanted me to stay on, you know, because they liked the character. So this commitment was previous to my commitment to, the commitment here at the Drury Lane was previous to my commitment to Executive Suite. So they didn't know how to dispose of me, and they summarily did it by shooting me. Yeah, they killed me.
What's next for you?
Well, ABC is holding me now. I just heard yesterday They are paying me a certain amount of money for me not to accept any commitments. I mean, serious commitments. Mm-hmm. I can work in anything else, but not in a series until December, because we did a picture called Fantasy Island mm-hmm. at ABC that evidently got very, very good rating, particularly after the first half hour. It really grew, got spectacular ratings, actually. Not like Roots, by any means, but for a show of its kind, very, very good ratings. So ABC is considering perhaps the possibility of using me in a series now. Perhaps even that, Fantasy Island's a series, I don't know. But in any event, I'm being held until December for them to decide. So that's kind of encouraging.
Would you like to do a series?
Very much so, yes. I've never done one, and that's one experience I'd like to have, too. Mm-hmm. See, I like to try everything in life. As an actor, I like to experience all kinds of things. And I've never done a series, so I would like the challenge of that.
What else haven't you done that you'd like to do?
Well, I mean, I've never had a great role in a film. A great, great role is what an actor dreams about. But as far as medium is concerned, no, I've done them all, radio, everything. The only thing I haven't done is nightclub. And and I don't know that I'm qualified, because I don't have that good a voice, you know, to sustain a show.
You did sing and dance with Esther Williams. And
yeah, but I mean, that's all right in a number, but not in a nightclub. Uh-huh. You know, to be out there an hour and a half or whatever it is, an hour, it's very demanding, and you should have a much better instrument, singing instrument, than I have. I am working on something, or rather a writer is working on perhaps the idea of me doing a one-man show. I would like to try that. Uh-huh. And there is a possibility that I might put it together. We'll see.
You mentioned radio. What did you do in radio?
All the Lux Radio, Lux Radio, you know, the dramatizations of
as a guest star
films.
On some of
yes,
those shows,
yes, uh-huh. Right.
We think that anyone who gets out here to Drury Lane North will be rewarded with your talents by a fine performance.
Well, thank you. It's Accent on Youth is for the casual observer who sits down and enjoys the play, because we have reason to believe that audiences are really enjoying it very much. The comments are marvelous afterwards, and the reaction, as you saw, of laughter and enjoyment, it's quite extraordinary. It's a very good play, very well written. It was a man who wrote with tenderness and with a smile rather than the constant belly laugh. I mean, he could write with a smile, which actually a smile is closer to the heart than a belly laugh. So, but however, it might seem simple from the distance to do, but believe me that this is as difficult to do for me as Don Juan in Hell, just as demanding, if not more so. Because in order to bring about and to create the proper moment for a joke to pay off, or the humor of it, you have to have almost exquisite timing, and you have to have tremendous energy to put this over. And, I mean, the people sitting on the audience, they say, well, a comedy, that's simple. No, it's, to me, much more difficult than a tragedy, than drama. Very, very difficult. I'm really exhausted when I finish this play. But very rewarded.
You give it your all. And you are really in command every moment you're on stage. You really know what you're
doing. If you're not, you're really in trouble, wouldn't you be in trouble, yes. No, it's a very demanding role, but I'm enjoying it very much at the same
You'll
time.
Be here through March 27th.
March 27th, right, yes.
I wish you the best of luck with
thank
this.
Thank you very
and,
much.
Thank you for all the entertaining things that you've done for all of us.
Well, you're very kind.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
that.
Ricardo Montalban.